This is not like just a simple, you know, mid-cycle correction anymore. This is a bear market that's going to take slightly longer. I still think a million could be potentially two bull markets away. Like, I think in the next bull market, we could get into the multiple hundreds of thousands. If you look at the four-year cycle, which Bitcoin has been moving in, you know, we're moving into the bearish period. If you're wanting to get into Bitcoin, minus 50% currently is already undervalued, but we could still get slightly lower. So there's definitely the potential for Bitcoin to move up many multiples once we consolidate long enough. Some people say the four-year cycle is dead. I don't think that's the proper way to phrase it. I think one should say the halving impact is dead, but not the four-year cycle. Bitcoin is severely undervalued at these levels. That's why in the next couple of months, we will form a bottom. I don't know exactly how low we will go, but I think our realistic outlook that maybe is good to assume that that will happen. I think we're already at fairly cheap sats here. We're not going to reach the minus 70, minus 80% drop from an all-time high. Why not? Because we didn't have that parabolic move up. But there's nothing wrong with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is doing exactly what it needs supposed to do. Bitcoin is the Trojan horse infiltrating the fiat system.
The Rational Root, the Rational Root, Rational Root, just Root maybe. Welcome. I'm stoked to have you on, man.
Thank you so much for inviting me on. Happy to be here.
I have a lot I want to cover with you. I want to start out maybe, well, first perhaps it's worthwhile just walking through this chart, but maybe before we do that, because I know and thank you for doing this, you've prepared a number of charts specifically for this, which I very much appreciate. What is your just current vibe check on where we're at right now? We were talking about this just off camera for a second. There's a lot of different opinions about what Bitcoin is going to do next. Always right now, the vibes seem to have been weird. We had I think for most people, pretty disappointing, last year. And then these first couple months of 2026, up until, you know, a little war in Iran seemed to spark off a little bit of a rally. It seems like things have just been weird. People have been super bearish. Where are you at with this? What is your kind of personal vibe check on the situation?
Yeah, I would say that Bitcoin is in a bear market. So we had like a bullish trend, and actually that's why I put this chart first, to kind of explain, okay, where we're currently at, or how do I see the situation? I mean, we had, so the line that you see in this chart is the bullish trend. So when you have a bull market, there's this, it's an exponential trend, right? Like the price chart is shown here in log scale. And so that's why that bull trend looks like a straight, like a linear line, but it's actually, it's a curved line if you would look at it in linear time. And so when you have a bull market, we came out of a 3-year bull market, you have this 3-year exponential trend. And an exponential trend is always unsustainable, right? At some point, an exponential trend will end. And so the bullish trend that you see here is actually based on a regression from that price data of the bull market. And then I drew like a channel, and I drew the bottom of the channel. That is that bullish trend that you see in the chart. And so soon after making the all-time high, we fell below that channel, that the bottom of that channel, below that bullish trend line that you see in the chart. And so that was for me a warning signal, like, okay. And this doesn't necessarily mean that it's the end of the bull market. In 2021, we had like a mid-cycle dip. We also were in an unsustainable trend in the 2021 bull market, and we still managed to make a new all-time high after, in November that year. So for me, it was also a bit like, okay, is this going to be like a mid-cycle dip, or are we going to move in a bear market? But at least what was clear is like, okay, we're not going to rise at the same trend that we were, you know, before we fell down that bullish trend. And so that was going to go on. But we fell below the $2 trillion market cap, or instead of like a multi-trillion dollar Bitcoin, we became like, again, in the single digits, you know, a $1 trillion market cap. And that actually coincides with the 100K psychological level, which has been a very psychological level for Bitcoiners to take profit as well. And so, of course, like, all those are all confirmations like, okay, this is going to take a bit longer, you know, this correction. And then, you know, we fell below the short-term molecular cost basis, obviously. And once we had that rebounds to the short-term molecular cost basis, that was actually around 97K. And we nearly touched 100K there. I actually told my followers, okay, this may be a good time to take profit because this correction might take longer. You know, it could take a couple months because time-wise, if you look at the four-year cycle, which Bitcoin has been moving in, you know, we're moving into the bearish period. And so even though we didn't have that parabolic move up, and we can get a bit to that later, why maybe, you know, what the reasons are why we didn't, but we didn't have that parabolic move at, like, which we usually tend to see at the end of a cycle. But then we, like, time wise we were actually ready to move into the bear phase. And so then of course we had this February 5 drop, and that was like clearly, okay, this bear market is going to take a little longer, and this is not like just a simple you know, mid-cycle correction anymore. This is a bear market that's going to take slightly longer. And so we currently had that 50% drop off the all-time high. And so now I don't, like, there are some differences between this cycle and the previous cycle. I think we're not going to reach, like, you know, the -70, -80% drop from an all-time high. Why not? Because we didn't have that parabolic move up, and so we had a much more distributed top, and so also it's much less likely to get these really high percentage term drawdowns. I think 50% is already like a severe drawdown, so we're already at pre-undervalued levels. But I still think there's also room to especially time-wise, but also price-wise, to maybe potentially have another leg down before we really start moving up.
Well, let me ask you too. I mean, what does another leg down look like? Because I was listening to your conversation. You were on Danny Knoll's show, formerly Peter McCormack's show, of what Bitcoin did in, I think it was November of 25. And Bitcoin was hovering like right around 100K at that point. And you called out, you were like, look, we may go lower. We may go 50% lower. I don't think we go much lower than that. Now, we've basically done almost exactly what you just said there could happen. We got down, I think, what the low was like, I don't know if we fully broke 60, but we were, you know, right around the lowest 60s there. I mean, so do you think, is this like the 58K gang prophecy that is going to be coming back? Is that what we're going to hit? I've seen also people, I mean, every analyst loves drawing, you know, lines on charts, and a lot of them are like, see, this is why Bitcoin's going to 40K, 30K, 20K, 10K, zero, negative, whatever. You know, you see so much noise out there. So what's kind of like the signal for you here?
So first in the November 10, we had like this huge, actually the biggest liquidations happening in the industry. It was mainly crypto, but also Bitcoin was affected. That was that first drop, actually, which brought us below that bullish trend and below the 100K level. That was, in my opinion, the first leg down. And then we had like a rejection of the short-term molecular cost basis, and the February 5th drop was really like that second leg down. Now we have some consolidation. We're now in that we're actually in the low 70 range. I think we can stay between 70, 80 for some time, but potentially, indeed, we might go to those upper 50s. The 58K gang, I think, is a level that's actually highly likely to reach within the next couple of months. But there are also some reasons why we don't have to get there. And it's mainly because, I speak for you as well here. Most of us Bitcoiners that have been a long time in this market and understand the value proposition of Bitcoin already think Bitcoin is severely undervalued at these levels. And I think pretty much like the majority of us would agree on that. And so that also means that we are less tempted to sell at these levels. And so we've had a lot of sell pressure around that 100K level. But I think moving forward, we're going to see less sell pressure, you know, at these the lower we go. And so at the same time, you know, passive flows or actually like institutional gradual adoption will continue. Not at the same level as during the bull market, but I do think that's why in the next couple of months we will form a bottom. And so I don't know exactly how low we'll go, but I think the upper 50s are a realistic outlook that maybe is good to assume that will happen. And then if we don't get there, you know, that is fine. So also I would recommend, like, I think we're already at fairly cheap sats here. And so, you know, it's very hard to time the bottom. I mean, we can do this with the four-year cycle, but there are some divergences from the four-year cycle, and we can get into some of those details in a bit. But it's very hard to time the exact bottom and the exact price, right? And so it's much more practical to just average in during these next couple of months and buy, you know, if we get another leg down, that is actually a tremendous opportunity for the time to come. Because what is happening on the other side is, like, we really have a measurable institutional adoption. And that continues. I mean, news comes out every week. We saw now again, was Kraken became a bank. And so even these, the industry is kind of converging with the fiat system, right? Kraken is becoming a bank. On the other side, I think Morgan Stanley is starting an ETF. That was the news of just like the last 2 days or so. And so we see that institutions are entering the space. I actually measure that by, you know, observing 13F filings, and, you know, we can get, I have actually a chart on that. Maybe I'll open that one. So this is the chart on the total ETF holdings. And what I try to do is, here is like see the share of institutional holdings from the total ETF holdings. And this is a very conservative estimate, because this is actually only institutions that are required to report. And those institutions need to have they need to be 100, have portfolios of 100 million plus. And so there's probably a lot more smaller institutions that are not required to report, that are not reflected in this data. So this is a very conservative estimate of institutional holdings, but we see a clear uptrend over the past years. And obviously, you know, the price has been a little disappointing, and we're kind of flat. We're down 1 percentage point of total holdings. But I would, you know, that is, or it's actually even less than a percentage point. But what we can see is actually institutions are here. They're getting their feet wet in this cycle. I mean, we literally had, this cycle was actually the gateway, like ETFs, which opened for institutions to come into the space. And we have seen that happening, and we will continue to see that happening. And especially once we move through this bottom formation, and once we get into new bull market, you know, also some of those institutions are starting to feel more of those gains, and they're going to be happier to you know, allocate more, a bigger percentage of their portfolio to Bitcoin.
One of the interesting things for me, and River put out a great chart on this, showing basically the change from in holding patterns between different entities, essentially showing, look, individuals in 2025 decreased their holdings, and who did that get sopped up by? Well, it got sopped up by the institutions. And I'm curious, just as you look at, the current price action, obviously from my, like, I haven't, obviously don't look into this as deeply as you do. That's why I have you here to educate me. But I look at a lot of the OG selling that we know has happened. You had that single galaxy whale who got rid of, 80,000 Bitcoin? Like, that's one guy getting rid of 80,000. You know, there's a bunch of other whales that have been selling. I had Lynn Alden on recently. She pointed out, like, look, Walker, whales sell every cycle, right? But for a lot of whales this cycle, it's like 100K was very much like a magic number they've been holding since it was a few dollars or maybe a few cents or a few hundred dollars or even a couple thousand. They've got sitting on massive, massive gains. Okay, they're rotating out a little bit. But is that what you think has been the primary driver behind the current kind of just, let's say, chop solidation lower, the crab market lower? Or is this something more cyclical, like this is just what's bound to happen every cycle, if cycles exist? We can kind of get into that later a little bit too. What's your read on that in terms of kind of the primary driver for what we're seeing now? Wish you could access cash without selling your Bitcoin? Ledin makes that possible. The global leader in Bitcoin-backed lending, Ledin has issued over $10 billion in loans since 2018 and has a perfect record of protecting client assets. Why is a Ledin loan different? Well, with custodied loans, collateral is not lent out to generate interest. No credit checks, no monthly payments. Apply in minutes and repay whenever you want, with zero penalties. And proof of reserves reports verified by a top accounting firm are published every 6 months. Ledin gives Bitcoin holders a secure, transparent way to unlock liquidity without selling. Learn more at ledin.io/walker. That's ledin.io/walker. If you're hodling Bitcoin personally or for a business, here's the uncomfortable truth. You probably don't have insurance. Most policies exclude Bitcoin, and the ones that don't, they only pay you back in fiat. What's the point of that if you need to claim a loss when number go up? That's not insurance, that's liquidation. Now there's another option, BDIC. They're building an insurance marketplace on the Bitcoin standard. One Bitcoin lost equals one Bitcoin paid. They've integrated with Liana Business for enterprise self-custody with personal wallet coverage options coming later this year. If you care about protecting your Bitcoin as Bitcoin, sign up for the waitlist at bdic.io/walker. That's bdic.io/walker. Insurance on the Bitcoin standard. Blockstream Jade Plus delivers robust security with fully open source hardware and software. Its unique genuine check feature ensures your device is authentic, giving you ultimate peace of mind. With versatile connectivity options, including Bluetooth, USB-C, built-in camera, and SD card, Jade Plus offers unparalleled flexibility in managing your Bitcoin. Whether you prefer wireless convenience or air-gapped security, Jade has you covered. Its innovative design features a durable metal case, a bright 1.9-inch color screen, and intuitive navigation buttons that make managing your Bitcoin straightforward and enjoyable. Jade Plus also supports secure, air-gapped transactions via QR code signing using the Jade Link storage device, keeping your Bitcoin safe without compromising convenience. Visit store.blockstream.com and use my coupon code WALKER for an exclusive 10% discount on your Blockstream Jade Plus. Protect your Bitcoin, sleep better, stack harder.
Yeah, so I think the primary reason why we had this such a distributed cycle in general. So I do believe cycles are happening, by the way, and I do think we're in a bearish phase currently. And I think the 100K was a very psychological level, and we see actually that we can actually confirm that by on-chain data. There was an equal amount of selling of coins, even though we only reached like much lower prices, like barely above 100K, but we still had equal distribution to previous cycle in terms of actual BTC. And so why is that the case? I mean, and a factor actually to diminishing returns in general each cycle have been the fact that we have compounded sell pressure from each class of Bitcoin, right? So I don't know when you got exactly in, but for, you know, we have the class of 13, the class of 17, the class of 21. And so all these
classes.
Class 20
for me.
Okay, yeah, see, so we have all these classes, they came in at different price levels, but even for the class of 20 or class 21, you know, you're looking at a 10x gain for the 100K price level. And so, but for a class earlier, that was like a 100x gain. And for a class before that, it was a 1000x gain. And we're also getting to liquidity level. Bitcoin is liquid enough to actually sell some of those early coins. Like before, previously, in previous cycles, that wasn't really possible. And so I think this 100K psychological level, much like the 10K psychological level, it also took a long time. We have hovered a long time around the 10K level, you know, had a bearish phase below it and then got back above it, again, hovered around it for a long time before we are actually able to move out of that. And I think that is also happening with the 100K psychological level. And so, yeah, I've been referring a lot of times to this IPO moment. I think that is exactly what has happened this cycle. So in a way, there are actually some really shifts this cycle in which the cycle differs to previous cycle. First of all, this was actually the cycle with the least amount of retail inflow so far. But we've moved to institutional inflow, which is exactly what we want to see if we want Bitcoin to succeed, by the way. And so I also think it's inevitable. I mean, some people view, like, okay, Bitcoin is being absorbed by the fiat system. I think that's not happening at all. Bitcoin is the Trojan horse, like infiltrating the fiat system. And like, how were we supposed to get to, you know, world, like full adoption of Bitcoin without institutions having getting involved? I mean, it's that is impossible. I think that happened basically is that most of retail that wanted to get into Bitcoin had 10 years to do so. And we are here, you know, and we're believing it, you know, and so to the level now that we convinced institutions that it's here to stay and they're investing in it. But I also think in moving into the next cycles, we're good. I mean, there's still going to be some new people that, you know, we're missing here and there. But in general, I think, you know, probably some of the Gen Zers that are coming of age, like to actually think about, start thinking maybe potentially about retirement or pension or something, like they might get involved. They suddenly get it. But that is like a relatively small amount, I think, you know, like, so I think what we're going to see is indeed, like we're going to see a continuation of stronger institutional adoption. And at the same time, we're currently at this IPO moment where long-term holders are still distributing some of their coins and making their lives better. But at some point, we're going to reach that level where most of us sold like the majority of coins we would want to sell, you know, like I think there's a limit for every holder. Like we want to improve our lives and possibly, you know, distribute some of our coins to have this improvement to our lives. But at some point it stops, you know, then we're like the lives are improved, we're going to sit on the rest. And so I think we're moving through that phase. And I think that what we're going to see over the next months is that we're going to form this bottom. There's going to be less selling from long-term holders because especially it's not going to be as interesting to sell at these lower prices. They're like long-term holders are going to sell the least possible, but possibly some are obliged to sell for whatever reason. So there will be still some selling, but I don't think it will be as much as the levels that we've seen around that 100K price level. But once we get again back above that 100K price level, there might be some more distribution and that will still take some time, but we will get out of that and then we're up for like really a proper next bull market.
Want to get into a couple points there, but first I do want to ask, you know, you mentioned, and I think this is something that a lot of folks have sensed, is that the retail demand was really not here this last cycle. There just wasn't the same level of hype, just generally. That being said, you also had the ETFs during this cycle. So, I mean, just I'm curious your thoughts. Was a lot of the, quote, retail demand that you'd usually see in just spot Bitcoin actually just funneled through the ETFs? But wouldn't that, or was it still, even with the ETFs, still less retail demand than you would expect?
Yeah, so even with the ETFs, I think it was less retail than we would expect. I still think there was a significant amount of retail, but there was definitely more institutional interest in Bitcoin this cycle. And one important thing to understand is that retail, you know, they in general, in previous cycles indeed, they would buy through exchanges. And that would set the spot price. It would influence, it would more heavily impact the spot price. But the retail that flow that came in into the space through ETFs, and I mean this week there was actually some talk about manipulation, you know, price suppression of Bitcoin, and because we cannot believe we're at these -50% from all time high levels, you know, we all think like as maximalists, like okay, Bitcoin is severely undervalued at these levels. Bitcoin should not be like it should be way above 100. In our minds, Bitcoin is worth 200K or above, you know, and so. So, but that is not the general mindset of people like coming that invest in stocks, you know, who now maybe for the first time allocated some of their money through these ETFs to Bitcoin as well. And so I think those are, you know, definitely people with less conviction than we are. But because they came in through this gateway, there is in a way a suppression of price because ETFs, they sometimes do an in-kind creation, which is called, and so they buy Bitcoin OTC, and so that less impacts the spot price of Bitcoin, and so we have ETFs like some of these authorized partners for ETFs, they try to get their Bitcoin, obviously the cheapest or like most the best way possible for them to have the most profit as well. And so so they look at OTC markets and try to get these coins and influence the price the least possible. And so in that sense, like the rumors about price suppression are not entirely incorrect. I think one, you know, and it's not that OTC doesn't have an effect on Bitcoin, because there's only so much OTC, and some OTC desk will hedge well at exchanges with spot Bitcoin, and so there are some of these dynamics going on. But I do think that, like, you know, if you buy OTC, you're actually taking sell pressure or buy pressure away from the spot market, and it's more indirect. And so in a way, it's a bit of suppressing price. And that's why also I think we've had such more distributed market in general. And because, you know, ETFs were one of the primary inflows of demand for Bitcoin this cycle. And so less retail, less retail purchases through spot exchanges, and even some of the retail that now came through ETFs, and institutional adoption came in through ETFs or treasury companies, which many times works with these OTC desks, and so there was like less impact on the actual price of Bitcoin. So I think if all of that would have gotten into the spot market, you would probably have like a much more volatile Bitcoin price. Now, in the long term, I think, you know, Bitcoin still will go where it goes. Also OTC, I mean, if someone buys OTC and someone sells OTC, that doesn't directly affect the Bitcoin price, but still, you know, if that OTC purchase wouldn't be there, or that transfer, I should say, there's always a buyer and a seller, it would have gone through, the spot market. It would have had a more direct impact, but there still would have been an equal amount of sell pressure and buy pressure. So I think it's like a temporary suppression of price a bit. And so in a way, like some of those like Jane Street, like algorithms that I mean, there's some suppression going on with ETFs, but those are the general like mechanics behind ETFs. You know, they have these structures, and OTC markets were there long before ETFs even were involved in the space. There's many OGs that buy and sell Bitcoin through OTC. And so you could blame the same on those OGs for not affecting the spot price as much, right? I think that is what a free market does.
Oh, fair enough. And let me ask you, too, just on the cycle side of things, you said, you know, you still think that the four-year cycles are there. How much of this, though, in terms of the four-year cycles, ends up just lining up with the business cycle, with the overall liquidity cycle from a monetary sense? How much, you know, I mean, it also lines up with, like, elections, to a certain extent too. How much of it do you think in terms of the 4-year cycles is actually like having driven from a Bitcoin perspective versus, yeah, it's like, does the halving have a diminishing effect? Obviously, as the block reward halves, and how much of it is or always was influenced by more of the like external business cycle side of things? I'd love your take on that.
Yeah, so I actually have a chart on midterm elections,
amazing,
the effect on that, and where we actually look at the business cycle and how that moves in tandem with the 4-year cycle of Bitcoin. And so there is the, you know, some people say the 4-year cycle is dead, you know, like, but what I actually think, like, I don't think that's the proper way to phrase it. I think one should say the halving impact is dead, but not the 4-year cycle. I mean, we're still well within the bounds of the 4-year cycle currently. Now, that doesn't mean that we couldn't move out of it in the next couple of years. I think there's actually fair reason to assume we possibly could, but currently we're not. For some mystical reason, Satoshi chose the 4-year period for the halving, which reduces the subsidy basically for Bitcoin to have Bitcoin properly flourish. I mean, that's what the subsidy actually is, the having a subsidy for miners to start mining. And so Bitcoin eventually will have to do without subsidy, should be able to work on its own without any subsidy from the network. And so, you know, instead of like a gradual decrease in that subsidy, Satoshi chose this 4-year period, you know, and halved it with like this shock. Now, in the beginning, that shock was, of course, very severe. And we had a lot of early investors in there. But coincidentally, like the business cycle was always also in a 4-year period. And so I think liquidity has always affected Bitcoin much. And of course, over time, you know, we've gone from like the early OG or cypherpunk movement. We've moved to now like people with a stock portfolio investing in Bitcoin, which is it's a whole different cohort that is now currently investing. But all are driven by actually like liquidity, you know, like also the early cypherpunks probably were more incentivized to spend some of their money and put it in Bitcoin in the early phases when the market was doing well, you know, when they had a bit of extra money and to do these things. And so the business cycle always had a huge effect, in my opinion, on Bitcoin, and that has moved in tandem with the halving impact. And previously, the halving impact had a much bigger impact on Bitcoin than it currently has. And so we also saw a lot of higher gains in those early cycles, and currently not as much. You know, the halving didn't have as much impact. The ETF approval actually had more impact. We made an all-time high before the halving because of ETFs, not because of the halving. And so that shows how we've kind of moved from like where before we had much more halving impact to now like very little halving impact to now like some like a gateway like ETFs having more impact. But we still have moved within that 4-year business cycle. But the business cycle wasn't always 4 years. So, of course, like why do business cycles move in 4 years? And that has to, again, probably do with presidential elections, you know, that move on a 4-year basis. And so they stimulate the economy. And then, you know, in the midterms, usually it's like a bit of a bearish phase for the stocks in general, risk on assets. And that's what we currently, currently there's a bit of divergence going on. And I think that has to do with kind of an after effect of COVID. So we came out of COVID with a lot of money printing, and then, you know, we had a bit of a difficult market. And so people were struggling and businesses were struggling to get like to deal with all this inflation. And so we kind of like, you know, so in this chart, I actually showed, so the midterm cycle. So you see all the midterms. And we see how Bitcoin generally, you know, made like a low around that midterm. And currently this is in orange, we actually look at the yearly RSI for Bitcoin. In light blue, we look at the yearly RSI for the S&P 500, which is a risk on asset, which Bitcoin has high correlation with. And then in dark blue, we look at the ISM, at the PMI, the business cycle. And the business cycle index now moved above 50, which is actually means that we're getting out of like a bearish phase. But where Bitcoin actually just printed the low in the RSI comparable to like previous bear markets. And we're getting close to that midterm, that's this year. But we also see that the S&P is kind of rolling over. And so so it's very hard to know how the market's going to move forward. Is the S&P going to crash before the midterm still? You know, Trump obviously doesn't want to. He's doing everything he can to influence, you know, to keep this from happening. I think possibly Iran is one of those plays on that as well. Like if he can fix that war and have Iran cooperate before the midterms, you know, it could boost the economy. Many people of Iran are actually you know, getting into stable coins and Bitcoin for that matter, but stable coins, which is very important for the US because that's actually they purchase you know, like Tether and so forth. They purchased government bonds, and so that is good for him. We still get a change, of course, of the Federal Reserve chair. And which, you know, there's going to be money printing coming before the midterm election, but nonetheless, like historically, the midterm election were a fairly bearish phase for risk on markets. But as I said, like that was not always the case. Like before Bitcoin, actually before the 2008 financial crash, we had an 8-year cycle, and so that is also possible. And so I'm not ruling out that potentially we could move into an 8-year cycle this time, or at least an extended cycle. It's possible, but with Bitcoin, that currently seems not happening. Like, and I don't know if Bitcoin is the early indicator, if it's the canary in the coal mine, or if you know, because we have this really low RSI print now, and so which looks like a bottom, but we could hang around this low area for a couple of months and possibly for the next 6 months before we start moving out of that bearish phase. And so it will be definitely interesting to see, but those are some of the dynamics behind it. And so I think like the business cycle definitely had an impact on Bitcoin always, like in terms of liquidity, like optimal liquidity conditions, obviously, and you know, incentivizes investors to invest in risk assets. And but at the same time, we had more halving impact in the early days, and that is gone. So I think Bitcoin will become possibly more business cycle dependent moving forward as the halving kind of fades away.
I appreciate the rundown on that. And it kind of blows your mind a little bit that like some of the things with Satoshi, you wonder, was this planned or was this just coincidence? And he just released it when it was ready. And it just so happened that it lined up with these, there's so many different things like that, but I'm curious too, cause you know, you mentioned, okay, maybe we're getting sort of near to forming a bottom here. Okay, could we go lower? Will 58K gang be vindicated? Will it go just to 59 and not 58 just to leave them blue-balled? Who knows? But what I'm curious of is just comparing this to prior cycles, comparing where we are now, the indicators that you're looking at, because I know you look at a lot. If we compare what we're seeing right now with what we've seen in prior cycles, does this look like a bottom from that perspective, or does the data say something different?
Yeah, so we had like a fairly heavy capitulation event with this February 5 drop, but it wasn't of the same size as we typically see in a real bottom, in the real bottom of the actual previous cycles. And so for me, what this mostly looked like was, for example, compare an event comparable to the June 2022 low crash that we had, also time-wise. And so here we can, in this chart, actually, I looked at the realized price, which is the average purchase price of all Bitcoin. And I look at the short-term holder floor, which is actually a level based on the short-term holder cost basis. It's basically like how much loss, like what is the maximum loss short-term holders can sustain, practically speaking, that is the short-term holder floor level. And so if we look at those levels, we look at them in the chart, we actually see that we had a cross of short-term holder floor moving below the realized price. And that happened in June of 2022. And that also happened now on the February 5th crash. And so for me, it looks like we're very much in this position. Now, I don't know how low, as I said, like I think there's room for another leg lower. And in a way, time-wise is probably more important than price-wise. I think like on a price-based level, we are fairly undervalued levels. I mean, we could have this another leg down. You said high 50s. You know, it might also be low 50s. You know, who knows what the spike will be. You know, it's usually pretty bad. And but time-wise, we actually still have a couple of months. And so time-wise, I think there's still room to have this sideways chop, potentially, you know, demotivating the holders in the market because Bitcoin is basically not moving anywhere. And so people get a bit depressed about the price action and then before we really sat in the low. I think the bottom, usually bottom formation takes time as well. There's always this time factor to it. You know, it's not for the same reason we had a three-year bull market. Why has it always been like more or less a three-year bull market? For the same reason. It's like the amount of time people can sustain before, you know, this exponential rise in price becomes unsustainable. And so now we're moving into this bearish phase, and that, yeah, you know, historically tends to take, you know, slightly less than a year, but more or less a year. And we're a couple of months into it. We still have probably, you know, six more months to go to like form a proper bottom.
So are you of the opinion that like we won't be seeing a new all-time high this year? I mean, I'm not going to hold you to it, but like just broadly, I'm kind of curious. Like you're saying, if this plays out as it has in the past, if this time is not different, history is rhyming, you know, with itself, we won't see a new all-time high this year.
That is indeed very likely. I think, and I hope to be proven wrong, by the way. We could be in a situation of the 2019, for example, where we actually, you know, hit 10K, and then we had like this mini bear, you know, like before the 2020, before the COVID crash, we had this mini bear. And you know, this time might also be slower, but I have to assume like the probability is higher that we still have a couple more months of price action, because I do think that the bull market, the rush that we had in the bull market is kind of gone. Like hype is elsewhere. Basically hype is in AI and is in gold, but it's not in Bitcoin. And so I think, yeah, Bitcoin needs some time to recover, form a bottom, you know, slowly start to move up. And we still have some, so the way to be proven wrong, by the way, so I'm not saying it's impossible to have a new all-time high this year. I think it's just unlikely to assume that it will. And before we do, we actually have to, like we have some real resistance levels to recover, which is that psychological level of 100K. Like we first have to move back above the short and holder cost basis again to move into bearish stories. So if that happens, I mean, I'm all for it. But I still think there's a lot of resistance at that 100K level and before. So I think like time wise, it's unlikely for that to happen, but not impossible.
Well, the interesting thing is too, that, and you called this out, okay, maybe we're not as deep as prior bears have gone, right? But the bull didn't go as high as prior bulls have gone either. Like I think for a lot of people, it felt perhaps, you know, disappointing. Then again, we did go from 16K to 126K in a couple of years. So like there were still moves. It just felt kind of weird. And maybe COVID threw a strange wrench in all of these gears. But I'm curious too, like on the subject of diminishing returns for Bitcoin, I think one of the big arguments that's been made of late, given the price action in gold and silver, and gold, which is obviously a much larger market cap. I mean, I think what, it's a 33 trillion, 34, something like that. excuse me. But you saw these massive moves in gold. You saw massive moves in silver too, which had a comparable market cap to Bitcoin, blew through that, and now, you know, has come back down quite a bit. Do you abide by the diminishing returns side of Bitcoin, like in terms of the price action in fiat? Or, you know, I mean, is it a relative thing where it's like, yeah, okay, returns aren't going to be as high as they were in front, you know, the 20, you know, like just after, you know, the first few years of its launch, of course, they're not going to be as high as that, but that doesn't mean Bitcoin can't still do like many multiples in a year. Where do you sit on that?
Yeah. So I think what we have seen is that, like Bitcoin is still a teenager. Basically 90% of the supply has been mined in these past 17 years. And so they're mostly in the hands of OGs and like really early holders of Bitcoin. And so we're now in this distribution phase. So there's not much new supply coming into the market, but a lot of old supply is being sold. And so there's still a lot of sell pressure. And so I think that's why, again, that IPO, analogy is such a great way to look at it. I think we're in this phase where we need to move through this distribution where like that supply gets into stronger hands again, in institutional hands this time. And then there's room because, I mean, Bitcoin's invention is digital scarcity, right? Now there is some paper Bitcoin expansion on because we have the fiat system involved. That is true. You know, you can, there's futures and you can actually have a dollar based contract without touching Bitcoin. And that takes again a bit of like, you know, pressure from the spot price away. But I still think like in the longer run that, you know, because Bitcoin has an instant settlement, I think, you know, there's always someone naked in that position, you know, and so when things get tight, like you want to have real Bitcoin, and so I think it's not as much as a problem that people perhaps think that it is currently, because there are some people out there that really think like, okay, Bitcoin is being absorbed by the same plays in the fiat system. But I think that is natural. I still think Bitcoin is working as the Trojan horse. Because I think what we're going to see is that like all these technological capabilities that Bitcoin has, like multi-sig setups, and they're all also going to be installed in institutional players at some point. It's just early on. Institutions are just getting their feet wet. Just as a newbie bought their first Bitcoin on an exchange and leaves it on an exchange, we now have institutions getting into the game, buying an ETF and leaving it in an ETF, like with a custodian, just because it's the easy first step. But once Bitcoin gets more mature and also these multi signature setups get more mature, and also when it becomes a bigger part of a portfolio. When does a newbie change to a hardware wallet? When, you know, the value suddenly it becomes of a sufficient size for it to do so. And I think with the ETFs and with institutions, that's going to be a similar thing. Once, you know, Bitcoin becomes a substantial part of the portfolio, they're probably going to think about better setups to protect their Bitcoin and or spread the risk. And so I think that's the natural process. So I think diminishing returns have happened because, you know, we had a lot of supply in the early days of Bitcoin. That is all in the hands of basically retail and OGs that are currently selling some of that because they were right. They made the right bet. Bitcoin is succeeding. And so now we have a bit of that sell pressure. We have gradual institutional adoption at this point, but that will continue to increase. And so I think we will at some point there's definitely going to be room for Bitcoin to move in multiples again. We saw actually that happening now in gold. And in gold, it took 50 years. It took since, like, gold was suppressed since the beginning of the fiat system, and now is actually moving out of that to a more natural price level, I would argue. And so I think market size, it does have an impact because at this point, as I said, there is less retail involved in Bitcoin or less new retail flowing into Bitcoin. And so there is, and also retail at these price levels has even less impact. And institutions are actually just gradually adopting it. And so it's no surprise that we have like this you know, very distributed price action going on. But I think at some point, Bitcoin is again in strong enough hands, we'll form a new bottom, and there's definitely going to be room for upside again. And it can go fast. It's slowly then suddenly, like we saw with gold. And that's a great example, actually.
Well, and let me just like dig into that a little bit deeper here. Okay, we've established like gold moved many, many multiples of Bitcoin's market cap, right? Like very, very quickly. Bitcoin hasn't seen a real like parabolic move in terms of just the violence that it used to have. It hasn't had that like face melting, just, you know, ripping off your face and leaving it on the ground. It hasn't had one of those moments in a while. Does that mean that when it does, and if that coincides with strong retail demand coming back, and it coincides with, I don't know, more wars and everything else, and people looking like actually taking that flight to safety, which Bitcoin truly does represent for those who grok it, does that mean that it still has the potential for some of those really kind of violent, mind-bending, face-melting moves? And I mean, what do you think it takes to bring the retail back in? Because like this has been kind of seems like the cycle of institutions, right? That's where the coins have been flowing to. They've been flowing from OGs primarily to institutions. Do you think we see that shift a little bit and we start to at least see, okay, maybe institutions are still accumulating, but now retail is as well. Maybe the OGs start accumulating again because that's the thing. They sell high and they buy low, right? Because they can move markets when you have tens of thousands or more coins, like you can actually make a dent in that. What's your read on it?
Yeah, so institutions often obviously also represent retail, right? Like we see that in treasury companies. Yeah. Like a lot of retails are also investing into treasury companies because they think there's more upside potential than just buying Bitcoin. And so then that Bitcoin actually get purchased on a more gradual pace by the treasury companies. So institutions often represent retail, and so I think moving forward, you know, I don't claim to know what's going to happen, but I think there's definitely the potential for Bitcoin to move up many multiples once we consolidate long enough. And I think hype needs time to build up, and I think a lot of mind share has been like taken away by AI and by actually gold by surprise. And so a lot of people that were chasing hype were not in Bitcoin this time or have left Bitcoin this time. But at some point, you know, Bitcoin is the perfect, the perfect product in a way to attract hype again at some point in the future. Even if all, like, just because it's like global, it's internet native, it actually has all the traits you would want for something to hype up. And so even if the underlying fundamentals of Bitcoin would be bad, it would still attract hype, in my opinion. But because it actually has real fundamentals, it's even more so. So I think that is just needs time. So I think we need at least a couple of months now to have a proper bottom formation. Then we'll start kind of like gradually moving up that 100K level. And at some point, like, okay, all the OGs that wanted to sell around that 100K level are going to be gone. And then, you know, Bitcoin can move up very fast. It's slowly and suddenly. We've seen that example with gold. And gold, it took 50 years. An IPO phase often takes a couple of years. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get a bit of like this choppy price action for quite some time. I think that is not that wouldn't be that strange at all. But I think Bitcoin can move fast. It's slowly and suddenly. It will happen for Bitcoin.
I like it. You know, somebody asked on social media when I put out that I was going to be talking with you, they asked a good question, which was, what would a broken spiral look like in observable terms? They said, is it peaks and troughs happening at totally different angles than prior cycles, amplitude, drawdowns and returns collapsing, or cycle becoming multi-peak and stretched out? And which of those failure modes do you think is the most likely in the next kind of the next regime, is what they said, but I think they mean like in this next cycle. Is that something you can address a little bit? Like what would cause these beautiful, you know, cycles that you have to potentially break down?
Yeah. So I mean, the spiral chart is actually probably the most beautiful way to illustrate the 4-year cycle within Bitcoin, right?
Agreed.
So when would that break? That the lines crossing would kind of like screw up the beauty of that illustration. So I agree there, you know, but I think that's actually bound to happen at some point, you know. So I don't think that's necessarily that Bitcoin is a failure because the illustration of the 4-year cycle starts to break. That what actually shows is that we're moving away from the 4-year cycle. And we saw that already with like some precursors to that. Like, for example, we had an all-time high before the halving. That never happened. And that was due to ETFs. It was like really a specific event within Bitcoin that made that happen. But at some point, you know, if the business cycle would start to expand, like perhaps to a 5 or 6 year cycle, which is in the cards, then obviously also the dynamics of the spiral chart are going to change, and maybe a bearish phase. But currently we're still within the bounds of that 4-year cycle, and so I also don't think within the next like 1.5 year or so I see very little reason for the spiral to break. After that, we'll have to see. It depends on what the business cycle is going to do, what liquidity conditions are going to be, like how that is moving forward. But I think eventually we'll get to some point that potentially, price could move below a previous price 4 years prior, which is actually what the chart illustrates. But I still think generally, you know, the spiral will keep expanding. Even if it becomes an 8-year cycle instead of a 4-year cycle at some point, for whatever macro reasons or geopolitical reasons, or I don't know what will influence the business cycle in that manner, and will have probably an indirect impact on Bitcoin. I still think overall the lines will start expanding, but maybe not as beautifully in that 4-year pattern, which is fine for me. You know, like I'm okay with that.
You're not married to it. It would make the chart look a little bit less cool, but it's not the end of the world, basically.
I have a 3D spiral that I could share. Let's pop that up.
Let's do it. Sounds great. No, I mean, I think it's fascinating too, because we try so hard to try and figure out like what is going on. And I think so much of Bitcoin analysis tends to be very retrospective and looking back and then trying to attribute here, this event happened at this time. And thus that is why Bitcoin's price did whatever it did at this time. This is sweet. Okay.
So this is the...
Okay, yeah, talk to me about this.
So this is the spiral chart, but in 3D form with like over and under value levels. And let me turn it a bit. So these blue dots are the halving events. So this was the last halving, the fourth halving. We can see that we had these dark green dots. Those are actually the autumn highs before the halving. And then we had like this whole bullish phase, you know, very similar to prior cycles. We were at like above the surface level. So if you have the surface levels, you know, above the surface level, we are actually at like surface is actually fair value for Bitcoin based on on-chain data. And then if you're above that surface level, you're actually like you get to like overvalued levels at some point, like usually when the all-time highs happen. And then. You know, at some point we move below the surface, which is currently, you know, what actually just happened. We now moved below that 100K level. And then we got like this whole bearish phase of Bitcoin before we make a bottom, which is, the last one was November of last year. And we see in time-wise that those tend to happen slightly earlier. So it could be October this year or potentially even earlier, because we also moved into a bear market since the last autumn high a bit sooner. But we're now below slightly below that surface level now. And so this illustrates the four-year cycle, the spiral. If price would start to move back, like in a 2D view, perhaps it could cross the line. But in a 3D view, it's still not crossing, you know. So we can always look at the 3D version if the 2 year starts failing. I'm just kidding.
Can I ask you too? In terms of, you mentioned, okay, the baseline is the fair value based on on-chain data. Can you just explain what on-chain data you're looking at for that? Is it realized price? Is it short-term holder cost basis? What is it that you use as that kind of demarcation?
Yeah, I use some metric. Like I use a top indicator and a bottom indicator that has been fairly reliable. The top indicator is actually more based on available supply for trade, so the amount of supply that's actually actively being traded. And I use the realized cap there as well. For the bottoms, I use a custom version of CVDD, which is coin value days destroyed, which actually talks about like how many, you know, each coin when it doesn't move, it actually builds up days. And so once you spend the coin with a certain age, like that value gets destroyed. And so there's historically that has been a very good bottom indicator for Bitcoin, because, you know, it talks actually about the value that gets destroyed by long-term holders, which set like a baseline for how low Bitcoin can go in a way. And so that is what this spiral chart is based on. I have also a 2D version of this, or like a normal chart, which is called the on-chain value map. I've shared that on my Twitter and Nostr account many times, so you can scroll through my feed and probably find the on-chain value map. Those are actually the same levels that are shown as in this 3D spiral version chart.
Let me ask you too. Okay, sometimes I feel dirty measuring Bitcoin and fiat, because it's like Bitcoin is the measuring stick, right? Like fiat's a terrible measuring stick. It's like we use the US dollar because it's the prettiest horse at the glue factory. It's the skinniest kid at fat camp, right? You know, it's better than measuring Bitcoin in the Iranian rial, for example, or, you know, the bolivar, or the Turkish lira, insert any other fiat. Like the dollar sucks, but it's still better than all the rest, right? But if I'm to speak in dollar terms, looking ahead, what are your thoughts on just generally, like, what does it take for Bitcoin? How long does it take for Bitcoin to actually hit that? Like, in my mind, the next big psychological price level, like after 100K, it feels like it's a million. I don't know if there's another psychological, maybe $420,696, you know, something like that, just for mimetic purposes. But like, what do you think is the next psychological price level? Is it a million? And what do you think it actually takes for us to get there in terms of cycles, in terms of time?
So A million is still slightly far away. I mean, so let's first recover above the short-term holder cost basis, and then we have to first get through this 100K psychological level, like to form like a proper base there. So I still think a million could be potentially two bull markets away. Like I think in the next bull market, we could get into the multiple hundreds of thousands. I still think there's that is still a level that would probably cause a bear market at some point for whatever reason, maybe quantum, FUD, or I don't know. Probably there will be something between 100,000 and a million still that causes a bear market. So I would still think $1 million, which by the way, I definitely think we will reach that at some point. But given what I already slightly mentioned it before, maybe not as clear, I mentioned there has been less inflow of retail. And also I said the last 10 years, possibly most of people that were interested from retail have been involved with Bitcoin or have heard about Bitcoin through some shape or form. And so of course there's still a slow influx of retail every year with, as I said, Gen Z coming of age and thinking about pensions and then starting figuring out suddenly about Bitcoin. So there will always be some influx, of course. But what I start to realize is that, maybe Bitcoin could potentially also be more of a generational shift. It's a lot of the millennials, let's say, are heavily involved in Bitcoin because they were simply of the age that they felt screwed enough by the fiat system. I mean, the invention came at the right time and they started thinking about pensions. That's why there's so many millennials in the space, I guess. And Gen Z was just still slightly too young to actually start thinking about pension. And so they haven't really gotten involved as much. But I also think the older, basically the millennial generation gets, the more successful Bitcoin starts to become, and it kind of Bitcoin starts to move in tandem with that generation, to adopt it as a base layer for society. And so I think, where previously, in previous cycles, I was still thinking, okay, we have diminishing returns, but we'll get this new influx of retail every cycle. Now I start to think okay, maybe it could also be more of a generational shift. And so which pushes actually that potentially that $1 million goal perhaps further out on the curve. And so I wouldn't rule it out. I mean, that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it has to happen in that way, but I think it's definitely worth thinking about it that in that way as well.
What's the old saying? It's humanity advances one funeral at a time. Basically, what you're saying, we need the boomers to die off. We need millennials to
take
over.
I didn't want to put it that bad, but yeah, practically.
Yeah, it's
speaking,
okay. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here. No, I mean, it's fair. And I mean, you do have to applaud the boomers a little bit. I don't know, Eric Balkunas and some of the other kind of Bitcoin ETF analysts have pointed out that the amount of draw or the amount of outflows that you saw in the Bitcoin ETFs during this drawdown was actually was very small. Like for the most part, the boomers were holding on. They weren't disposing of their Bitcoin just because it was a drawdown. Like that I found to be fairly interesting. I guess that's just because there's there's a different calculus happening there, right? Like this is, they're taking a small portion of a very large portfolio.
Institutions move at a slower pace. They take a longer time to actually get involved in the market, but once they're in there, they'll probably stick around longer and more carefully. I mean, there needs to be a decision made by a board, and that takes time, and so they move kind of slower than retail would move, basically on whatever the news is saying at the moment and sell or buy at the wrong times. So institutions avoid a bit of that hype chasing, but also hypes get chased with institutions, and we actually see with gold now how hype can be chased not only by retail but by a whole country, and so I think that's definitely also in the cards for Bitcoin. So I think that will actually happen to Bitcoin. It will just take time. I think what we see now, all the basically the OGs that are in Bitcoin, we've convinced institutions that Bitcoin is worth holding. and it's going to become a bigger part of the portfolio. And at some point, you know, yeah, boomers indeed start dying off and millennials are starting to take over. And, you know, it just makes sense for Bitcoin to be used as the base layer of society rather than like some, I don't know, fiat, like political dependent currency.
Amen to that. Let me ask you from a practical standpoint, do you advise people to, like, if they come to you, they say, Root, I want to get into Bitcoin. Do I smash buy or do I start DCAing right now? What do you tell people?
I'm going to show you another chart.
Amazing. A chart for everything. I love this, man.
Here's a chart with days until the halving. So as I said, like, okay, the halving is becoming less relevant, but the halving is more aligned, moves in tandem with like the 4-year cycle, which is the exact pattern we've been in. And so here I use also the on-chain data. So we use the realized price, which is the average purchase price of Bitcoin. And what we tend to see is that, you know, in during a bottom formation, we tend to move slightly below the realized price. Realized price is currently sitting at, a 45K. It's still, you know, it's kind of moving sideways for now. So it, depending on what Bitcoin does, like if we stick around maybe in the 70s, 80s, it might still move up a bit to the 50s. What also is true is that Bitcoin tends to move less dramatically below the realized price each cycle. So we might barely touch it this time, or perhaps this might be the first cycle that we don't drop below it, because we also, as I said, like, you know, the suppression to the upside also means suppression to the downside. You know, we have gradual institutional adoption that continues. We have probably a bit less of that long-term holder selling around these price levels. And so we could also, potentially have a more limited bottom than we made in previous cycles. But time-wise, as we see, I think, and that's still something I say, I think more so time-wise than price-wise, there's still, you know, it's not really in favor. Like, I think there's still a couple of months ahead that we could have this sideways chop, potentially have another leg like towards that realized price before we really start like building up again and starting this upward movement. My recommendation for anyone, because I think Bitcoin is already severely undervalued at -50%, and also if we look at what Bitcoin represents, what it can do for the world, like, in my opinion, Bitcoin is more important than AI. Like, AI has a lot of cool things and it's going to add a lot of efficiency, but it's also going to allow governments to get away with tons of money printing, which is exactly what Bitcoin solves. And so fundamentally, I think Bitcoin is more important for society than for humanity in general than AI is. AI will perhaps make some lives better, but also worse in some situations. Bitcoin will make people's lives better, in my opinion, and it's much needed, especially in a world moving into with AI. I think, yeah, if you're wanting to get into Bitcoin, -50% currently is already undervalued, but we could still get slightly lower. So my, like, I think the practical approach here is for the next couple of months to just average in, like, and don't try to exactly time that bottom. You know, it might be a wick at a certain moment in time. Maybe it has already been in, you know, because institutions keep gradually buying and the sell pressure from long-term holders starts like diminishing now. And that this is it, like, you know, it would be really cool. But I think the more likely outcome here is that we still have some time of that, you know, forming a bottom takes time, and especially given that that mind share is taken away by AI and gold, I think, yeah, there's going to be a bit of a drag on Bitcoin's price. Now that's cool that we're in the 70 range now, but we see that every cycle, you know, we have like these blue dots that represent the all-time highs, basically the bull markets, and then we start to move in a bear, we have a drop towards that like realized price, then we move a bit up. And, and then we turn over again, we actually make a low and then we start moving up. And so I think that is the pattern we've seen historically. I think it's also the most practical to assume that that will happen. Now, that doesn't mean that it has to happen. I mean, I'm willing to change my mind at any moment in time. If Bitcoin moves back above the short-term holder cost basis and we move into bullish territory, I become a bull. but currently, I'm a bull long-term, but I do think we have to get through this bearish phase in the next couple of months.
Fuck, dude, are you telling me we're about to go into the 40s? Is that what I'm hearing right now?
I actually, I mean, the higher 40s would be kind of my lowest estimate. So I, as I said, I don't think we have to get there because we have this, you know, I think treasury companies like Strategy will probably keep on buying this whole bottom down. They are prepared. They have the long-term mindset. And I think like if we compare this to the previous bear market, like 2022, we had a lot of these crypto companies falling over. And so there's a bit of that fear, like, oh, are the treasury companies fall over as well? But I don't think any of the treasury companies, you know, got into this game without expecting that we could have a year bear market, which is literally what the 4-year cycle has represented, right? Like, you know, from the start. And so, and definitely Strategy isn't, you know, their you know, liquidation price, there's no real liquidation price, but I think it's like around 20K or something. Like they would get in real troubles. But yeah, I think there's like no chance that we'll get there and get that low. So I think Saylor's play on the long term is the totally like the correct mindset, and I think he's able to like survive this bear market, and he's the biggest one that has the most you know, market share in terms of treasury companies. Maybe some small ones will still fall over if we drop a little lower because of bad like risk management, but I think this phase will pass, and I actually expect it to be less severe than the 22 bear market. But time wise I do think we can get like choppy price action, so we could stay maybe perhaps in 3 months we'll talk and we're still at the same price that we are today. You know, in a way that would be good. You know, that would be like this continuation and of the 4-year cycle, and then maybe have like one more drawdown slightly, and then you know, but yeah, I see it also as a tremendous opportunity for someone. Like some of the people I talk to are actually waiting, like they are understanding this concept as well, and they're waiting to become full coiners, and so that is really cool to see. And so I think this also allows for a tremendous opportunity.
What I'm hearing is 58K is a magnet. That's just, you know, the prophecy will be fulfilled. 58K gang will celebrate. And then we can, once we've had that, then we can go parabolic. I'm putting words in your mouth, but this is just what I'm intuiting out of this.
Yeah. That I think it's a likely outcome, but I mean, it's all probabilities. And so I cannot say this is what Bitcoin is going to do. Bitcoin actually tends to do the opposite of some what most people think. But I looking at history and looking at the data and actually looking at the current on-chain data, because on-chain data is not perfect in predicting what Bitcoin is going to do, but it's fairly good at estimating like in what kind of position are we currently like compared to previous cycles, and like, you know, and actually it shows we're very much in line with previous cycles. And so like as much as I want to say 4-year cycle is dead, you know, the 4-year cycle is not dead, like not at this point. It's actually we're exactly in the same pattern. Yet did we not have a parabolic move up? Like yes, that was a difference, but there's actually good reasons for that. I tried to explain him this time, you know, it's gradual institutional adoption, a bit of suppression because of a lot of OTC purchases instead of spot, and so we have like a much more distributed top, which we already saw a bit in 2021, and we saw it even more so in this cycle. So there doesn't have to be, there's no rule that there has to be, that the cycle has to end with a parabolic top. You know, that is something unsustainable to begin with, and this time there was less hype in the market than previous cycles, and so we had a bit more distributed price action.
Right. Let me ask you too, are there any charts that you have here that we have not gone over yet?
There are a couple, but they're not like of major importance. This is maybe the last interesting one to talk like about the near term. So this is the supply distribution. So it actually puts basically from zero to all-time high, where like the 21 million coins, at which price levels are they all sitting? You know, like, so where have they been all purchased? And so we actually see like very interesting here. This is the November 2022 bottom, like the 16K. It's still like fairly high bar like that. And that stems all the way from 2022. So you see how this was like really a capitulation bar. Now in February, we had the crash. We had a bar, which is not as high as the 2022 bottom. And that's like, this one is much more recent, right? Like, so usually when a bar is recent, there's still a significant chance that it will move lower over time because, you know, Bitcoin gets sold. That was like, you know, purchased it at this price level. And so that also, again, is like one of those reasons why I think, oh, this looks more like a June bottom than like a real bear market bottom yet. Like currently we're sitting right in this gap, you know, so we had the 67K price level, 85K level. And so we're sitting in this gap where there's very little supply sitting here. So this is also a bit of like resistance moving into this zone because there's like supply that might be sold. And here there's a bit of support. You know, there's already supply bought at this. And so it's very likely in the near term to like kind of stay within this range. I mean, Bitcoin can, of course, do whatever it wants. It might move like suddenly like much higher, whatever, like depends on many events. But I'm talking about probabilities, like a likely outcome, in my opinion, is to get like sideways chop within the 70, 80K range for the near term. We see that by this on-chain distribution.
Okay, no, it's an interesting chart. Was there another one you wanted to put up too? I just want to make sure we get through all the charts in case.
Yeah,
we
covered most of it actually. There's still one on profit levels. So this is maybe the last one that we haven't really shared, which is this is profit, like short term holder profit. And we see now that we're like the profit levels are very near zero, which typically indicates this bear market phase, you know, like these. So these red bars represent the bear market basically. And so what we see is that in previous bear markets, we had actually quite a lot of red bars, like before we had that real bottom formation. So, and currently we're like in short. So as I said, like it could be 2019, like, okay, maybe this time is different, you know, like we could move out of the fast, but my assumption, like the main probability is that yeah, it will still take some time and that we, you know, we need the time to form this bottom and that profit levels will stay low for the near term and for the next couple of months. So I expect these red bars actually to continue and be more similar to previous bear markets rather than like the 2019 situation. Basically because like why? Because hype is a bit gone in the market. Like it's with AI, it's with gold, it's not with Bitcoin. Now there's the Bitcoiners that are with Bitcoin, but yeah, those will make sure that the bottom gets formed eventually before we start moving into like a new bull. And I don't know if you have any other questions about this chart, let me know.
It's fascinating stuff. I mean, you know, I remain extremely bullish. And I guess the reason that I remain extremely bullish, like, even though you're telling me like, look, we could probably go, maybe we could go into the 40s. Maybe we're probably going to go into the 50s. Maybe we're going to crab around for a while. I just wasn't expecting, and this is like an expectation setting thing, I wasn't expecting to be able to buy Bitcoin under 100K for such another extended period of time. Like, and
exactly,
that was maybe
yeah.
me being too bullish on the front end of that, right? But now
I think
like
there's many
surprise.
People in your situation, especially, you know? From like people from like our white one cycle in, they feel that
yeah.
they don't have enough Bitcoin yet. I think there's tremendous opportunity for them to get more Bitcoin. Yeah. So I also think it's like really an opportunity that should like, you know, take advantage of this situation, guys. Like if you're in that situation, you don't have enough Bitcoin, and actually no one has enough Bitcoin, but if I think of like, I mean, I have some OG friends, like even from 2013, 2011 era, you know, they're sitting on a lot of Bitcoin. And so of course, you know, they're not really necessarily looking to add more, like, you know, they are fine, you know, and they actually are the ones causing some of this distribution because they made the right bet, you know, and I think that's right. natural. I mean, we have this adoption, but there's nothing wrong with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is doing exactly what it needs supposed to do. And we're following even this parallel like model of adoption, which I think, yeah, is this natural phenomenon. I think that's very realistic to continue that. And Bitcoin has all the fundamentals there, you know, it keeps on improving. Yes, there is some quantum resistance fear, as I said, you know, that needs to be taken care of, but there's already people working on that. We have Bitcoin Improvement Proposal 360 working on that, exactly that, to protect our coins. Now, I'm not saying some of the quantum stuff could definitely still cause another bear market because, you know, it means like in decentralized, you know, consensus to get consensus for like, you know, having another improvement to Bitcoin. which is then like historically was never an easy thing to do. But I do think we get it figured out if the fear becomes too high, the stakes become too high. And so we people need to move and we'll need to go through with some update at some point. And so I'm not afraid that will not happen. But yeah, Bitcoin for me represents so much opportunity. As I said, like for me, it's more important than AI. And I'm working with AI. I'm actually using Codex, Claude. I'm trying out these things, and I see it's going to have so much impact on society. We're still only at the beginning of the impact that AI is going to have. But AI will also provide tremendous opportunity, but it will also provide our government with tremendous amount of money printing or getting away with it again, and our lives will not really get significantly improved because the living standard will just increase. We'll have a robot in our house, but we still cannot afford to go to the supermarket, and so that will continue, and that is what AI actually represents in a way. And so I'm so happy that there is Bitcoin as a solution, and I think the whole millennial generation will there's enough of us within Bitcoin, and we've convinced the institutions they're not going away. We actually have evidence that they're only increasing their positions. Our regulation is getting better in the US especially. Was it bought? Yes, but doesn't matter. It it's going to get there, and it's going to get adopted, and we'll continue, and Bitcoin will continue to infiltrate the fiat system till it's big enough to really take over.
Man, I say amen to that. I think that's a perfect note to wrap up on too. Root, where can people go to find you, to check out your newsletter, anywhere else you want to send people?
Yeah, so I'm on Noster, and I'm on Twitter as @TheRationalRoot. And then I have the Bitcoin of BitcoinStrategyPlatform.com and BitcoinStrategy.substack.com, where I have my newsletter. So if you subscribe, you get like access to these charts, to my insight. I actually send out a weekly newsletter with these updates. And paid subscriber get actually access to all the live charts and to extra information, to keep them prepared for what's coming and feel comfortable.
I love it. Well, I appreciate you breaking all this stuff down for us today. This was fascinating. I think even though you say we may be going lower, I think I'm still more bullish after this conversation. So I don't know, mission accomplished somehow there. I remain bullish. I'm going to keep stacking as hard as I possibly can. I encourage my fellow plebs to do the same. But yeah, anything else you want to leave folks with before we close out?
No, thank you so much for having me, Walker, and keep doing what you're doing. Keep spreading the good information on Bitcoin. And, it's in our hands to make the world a better place and to do whatever we can to have Bitcoin prosper also. So,
amen to that. And thank you to everybody who joined on the live stream on Noster. This show live streams only on Noster. So if you want to see it live, go check out Noster if you haven't already. Rational Root, Root, thank you so much for joining. This was a pleasure, man. Glad we got the chance to do this. And I remain bullish. And that's a wrap on this Bitcoin Talk episode of the Bitcoin Podcast. Remember to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're watching or listening, and share it with your friends, family, and strangers on the internet. Find me on Noster at primal.net/walker and this podcast at primal.net/titcoin. On X, YouTube, and Rumble, just search at Walker America. And find this podcast on X and Instagram at Titcoin Podcast. Head to the show notes to grab sponsor links. Head to substack.com/@WalkerAmerica to get episodes emailed to you. And head to bitcoinpodcast.net for everything else. Bitcoin is scarce, but podcasts are abundant. So thank you for spending your scarce time listening to the Bitcoin Podcast. Until next time, stay free.